Welcome to In Season, where we explore farming and gardening in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. For this week's episode, I had a bit of an adventure, heading up the Columbia River and traveling into the deepest heart of Brownsmead. I was visiting Brownsmead Island Farm, the home of Dirk and Amanda Roan, and their two young children, Kirk and Ellen. The Roan family clearly loved these 200 acres, where they raise and milk a herd of 170 mostly Jersey dairy cows. The first thing on the agenda when I arrived was a tour of the farm, and I quickly found out that that meant hopping onto my own four-wheeler and zipping off across the pasture after the roans, Ellen and Kirk each riding along with one of their parents, and their yellow lab Reinhold loping along beside. Nope, never driven a four-wheeler before, but after those first 15 minutes of heart in my throat, I totally get it. Those things are fun. And we quickly got way out into the pasture to meet the cows, check on the grass, and talk about the challenges and rewards of dairy farming.
So this is part of your herd.
Yeah, these are the young heifers that, you know, they're with the bull, they're breeding these heifers. And
how many of them do you have?
There are, I think, 40 animals, close to 40. So, and then
how many cows do you keep generally?
We milk 170 cows, so we have 170 milking, 30 dry, so it's like 200 big cows, and then we've got 45 of these guys that are breeding age, and another 100 animals that are smaller. So
yeah,
this is actually as large as we've ever been.
So you breed your own? I mean, do you?
We buy bulls from the Sepakawin farm, and we've actually had very good luck. So we don't do artificial insemination. We just use bulls.
And let them do their bit.
It's just like anything that involves doing less work is a good idea. And honestly, with the bulls that we've been using, they have shown improvement over when we were doing artificial insemination. So if you get the right bulls, theoretically, and in our case, practically, we've gotten, I think, better results. So, and you don't have to spend 14 hours a week or whatever. You know, it takes a lot of time to do a lot of those things. So
the artificial artificial insemination?
Yeah. Which is our way of
doing it. Oh, I see your bull.
Yeah, with the yellow tag.
Yeah.
So we'll move those guys there from they get those two fields now, to this area, and then another field of low-lying area, and then for until September, hopefully we'll make two or three cuttings more of hay on the hay fields, and then after that they get everything.
Did your cows get out on to grass really late this
year? They did, yeah.
Because it was so wet.
Yeah, basically winter went from, for our grazing herd in particular, the winter started October 5th and went till May 20th. And in extreme years, we've been able to keep our cows out, our milking herd out until Christmas. And then they've gone out at the beginning of April. So winter was 2 months longer this year.
Wow.
So, which, you know, we have, the milk prices are decent, the feed costs are lower, and we're milking more animals and producing enough milk, which is all great. And so, that's all good, but it, you know, with the bookkeeping and it's in June, we're still paying for winter.
How old are these buildings?
The old brick structure was probably built before 1920.
Uh-huh.
But all the other stuff is like 1972.
Uh-huh.
And then our parlor was built in 2006. So you can kind of see how, of course, in the summer, spring, summer, and fall, we keep everything out as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
But in the wintertime, they live in, this is called a freestall barn, where they have a place to lay down with their head forward, and then we try to keep it as clean as possible. So they have a place, they're out of the weather.
Yeah.
And then we use a scraping tractor to pull the manure out and into an underground tank. You can see the tractor, there's a slot underground tank.
Okay, I see it.
And then over there you can kind of see up high a little bit. That's the manure separator. Very expensive piece of equipment, and it separates the manure into liquid and solid. The solid drops out from the machine into a pile, and then the liquid goes into like a 60,000 gallon concrete tank.
And then the solid is the amazing Turbo Grow,
and then the liquid is it's the LNG, it's the liquefied natural grass. So in the winter time, we'll put that out on our pastures, and in the summer, we try to retain as much as possible, so then when we make hay, then we can put that on our hay fields.
And that it's a great fertilizer.
It's an amazing fertilizer. It's the difference between low-quality grass and premium-quality grass.
After the farm tour, and after a delicious dinner, Dirk, Amanda, and I sat down to talk more about their life and work on their dairy farm. So dairy farming in Brownsmead, how did you start doing this? Why are you doing this? How and why? Yeah.
I grew up here, and this was a farm that my dad started. And at one point, I had to decide whether or not if I wanted to carry on with the farm. And I said that I did. And so in 2001, I bought the farm, or sort of making payments. And so then Amanda and I got married in 2006.
Four.
And Amanda was busy involved in her family business. And at one point, she wanted to not do that anymore. And I said that if she wanted to do this, that there would be more than work that we could ever possibly accomplish. So she likes it, and we're still here.
I think I like it more than he does.
So you didn't grow up dairy farming?
No. My family has a funeral home in
Astoria. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
So what do you think? I mean, you've been doing this for how long now?
Probably 2005.
Yeah.
So 12 years, I guess.
But you grew up out here in Clatsop County?
In Astoria.
In Astoria, yeah. Yes. So you were familiar with the area. And,
yeah, I don't think I've ever been to Brownsmead before. I met Dirk.
Well, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It was challenging getting out here and just thinking, I'm really glad I have a GPS.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, so you have how many acres? You were saying
200 acres is kind of the tax lot. So there's probably 170 acres where we live on a hill. I don't know if it's 30 acres hill surrounded by tideland, and so we try to use the grass that grows so well in Brownsmead spring, summer, and fall to do as well as we can with using that to produce milk through wheat with the cows involved in grazing, and then we make hay, of course, to help lower our costs during the winter months.
And the hay that you make, you're consuming it all yourself. I mean, you're not making hay to sell to other people.
That's just for our own use, yeah.
And how many cows do you milk?
We milk 170 cows right now, which is a bit high. Usually we're around 150 cows, so it fluctuates with the seasons.
And this year has been particularly challenging, you were saying, just because of all the rain that we've had.
Yeah, we had a Lewis and Clark winter, I guess. Winter went 2 months longer than normal. So for us, winter was effectively from October 5th, we could no longer put our cows out because it was raining all the time, till May 20th. May 20th is when we were able to let our cows out for the grazing season, which was probably a month late. Normally they're going out April 15th or even before that. So that costs a lot more to feed your animals to produce the milk. So it's just a lot more work.
Are they more cranky if they have to be kept inside?
I think they're fine, but there's just a lot more work. And, you know, each season has its own work that you do. And by the time in a long fall, you know, you're kind of ready to move on and you're ready for winter. And then when you're tired of winter, then you're ready for spring. And we just had a lot more winter.
This has been a lot of winter this year. So I think with dairy farming, I think people understand that it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of work. And you're also, I mean, your schedule is kind of, I mean, you're tied to the milking schedule, aren't you? So go through like a typical day. Like, when does the day start?
Well, we have an employee, so when he's working, he'll be out there milking cows at 3 in the morning. He'll get the cows out of the fields with a four-wheeler, he'll milk the cows, and then he'll be done milking the cows around 6. So, like today, I got up around 6 o'clock. I'll go out, make sure the cows have gone out to the field, and then I'll mix some feed up, because they'll be brought in later to eat lunch, I guess you could say. And then I'll be out there for like an hour and a half or so, and then I'll come home, and then we'll have breakfast. And then we'll go out, and then we did a bunch of work this morning with taking care of the animals, some little calves that are big enough to move on to out to the field or whatever. So we've been making a lot of hay for the last month at a pretty rapid clip. So now then when you get done making the hay, then you have a break so you can take care of your animals. So it seems like anytime you do anything, you can't do everything at once. So
yeah,
we were making a lot of hay, and now we're taking care of our animals. So then we'll start working on other projects.
And you milk twice a day?
Yeah.
So 3 in the morning and then...
2 in the afternoon.
Two in the afternoon.
365 days a year, so...
That's a big commitment.
Yeah.
Because you can't just skip a day if you don't feel like doing it.
No.
Rain or shine.
Rain or shine.
Wow, yeah. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I would say theoretically it can be straightforward when you show people what you're trying to accomplish, but practically, there's a million things that can go wrong, whether, you know, an animal can get sick or different pieces of equipment that you rely on all the time. And if everything isn't working, then you have a problem, and then you need to figure out how to resolve that problem, whatever that problem may be. So there's a lot of moving parts, and things can go well.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break now to remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM, and we're streaming live at coastradio.org. If you're just joining us for In Season, this week I spoke with dairy farmers Dirk and Amanda Roan of Brownsmead Island Farm about the challenges and rewards of dairy farming on the Oregon coast.
So did you grow up, you grew up on a dairy farm? I mean,
I grew up on this farm, and, you know, we're living in the house that I grew up in, so that's pretty cool.
So it was familiar to you? I mean, the routine was familiar?
It was, but we've changed a lot of the things, we do things in a lot differently, and so we've kind of established our own routine and things that we want to focus on. And so every time you introduce a new routine, sometimes it takes a long time to refine that process to make it so it's manageable in terms of the amount of work. There's a lot of great ideas out there, and it's easy to have them, but the execution of a good idea usually involves a lot more work. So how do you practically change something, try to make it better, and then also make it so you can manage the workload?
We've talked in the past, and you mentioned that you'd traveled to different countries. It was right after college, or
yeah.
So you got to see a lot of ways, different kinds of dairy farming
mm-hmm.
around the world. What was impressive to you about some of those other systems?
I think New Zealand kind of is the leader in the global dairy industry and their grass management, where the animals are rotated through fields. We've tried to adopt that in other farms, especially in the Tillamook area and our area on the north coast, trying to manage the grass to make the most of it. And in New Zealand, they've really pioneered that. So that was pretty fascinating. I think we could have... I've never been to Ireland, but I wonder if we have a similar climate where we have hard winters, or we can't have long winters where you really can't have your animals outside. They need to be inside. And so we need to be prepared for winter too. And in a way, it can, if you have enough barn space and you have the infrastructure that you need to completely bring your animals off the land, that allows you to to protect the land. Like this year was a harsh winter, so if your animals are all off, you can keep them off the land when it's sensitive, and then
and by sensitive, like if the cows are walking on it, they can compact it or cause problems.
Like the worst is like when it snows and then it melts and then it rains, and then the ground has basically lost its resilience, and so it turns into jello. So if you run animals out there, it'll just turn it into mud. And a lot of people, we have always had some animals outside, and this has been the worst year. My joke is if you have one cow on a pasture, you have too many cows out on your pasture because it'll just turn into mud.
Yeah.
So if you can keep your animal off and you don't create mud, and then you wait until this year, unfortunately, the middle of May, then the ground, then you haven't hurt the ground, and then you can, you know, carry on. So.
But that's challenging.
With the pasture. It was.
Well, and keeping your animals inside, then you're dealing with a lot of manure management.
A lot of manure management, so. I got sick and tired of manure management this year.
So, but you do something with your manure.
Yeah, we store it, and we try to make the most of it. And typically in the wintertime, we'll use our manure to try to, recharge the pastures. It's like a battery where you recharge, you know, your nutrients is the way I think of it. And then in the summertime when you're making hay, especially from now, which is practically July, when you use it correctly, it'll allow us to make a lot more hay and a lot higher quality hay. So we really try to utilize what we do, utilize everything we have. And it's just more challenging with bad weather. You really can't be out there applying manure when the weather is really bad. And so this year presented a lot fewer opportunities to do that. So, and then having the animals inside an extra 2 months, well, there's a lot more to deal with, unfortunately. So,
one of the side products that you guys have from your dairy farm is the amazing and locally famous soil amendment that you call Brownsmead Turbo Grow. So you were showing me earlier this amazing kind of extractor. What is it that you call it? It's a very expensive piece of equipment that separates the liquids from the solids.
Yeah.
Not to be too graphic about it, but basically that's what's happening.
Yeah, I compare it to like making apple cider. When you make apple cider, you have, you know, obviously you're interested in the juice that you make the cider out of, and then which would be the liquid, and then the
pulp.
The pulp is kind of the other. So with the manure, basically we're separating the fiber from the liquid. So the fiber is stored separately, and then the liquid is pumped into this large 60,000 gallon tank, concrete tank. So that increases our storage capacity, which is a good thing, and then also makes two better products, whether it's the liquid that we use to apply on our hay fields or the solid that we can use in our own garden or other people's gardens, or I can apply that in areas where I can't apply liquid. So whether I sell it or we use it, it's all good. But
and the fact that it's been separated makes it easier to use.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can certainly attest to the quality of it because I use it on my farm and I really love it, and I don't ever want you to stop making it.
Yeah.
So yay cows. Thank you so much.
We like to sell it because we get instant gratification. Everything we do is like a long game.
Yeah.
What you do today, well, you know, we're making the hay that we'll feed in 4 months from now. So the turbo grow, we get, you know, instant gratification, which is nice.
Well, and it's, I mean, you have a little bit more control over it too, because you were talking earlier as well, one of the challenges with dairy farming is that your income is tied to dairy prices.
So the national market and the global market for milk and everything, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is like the stock market, and it rises and falls every day depending on what people think or imagine to be the market. And so the prices rise and fall, and our expenses independently of that also rise and fall. So ideally, we get a good milk price and our feed costs are low, which would be the case this year, where the milk price is decent and the feed costs are lower. So that helps in this year make up for the lousy weather. Last year we had extraordinary weather, which allowed us to cut our expenses significantly, but the milk prices were low.
So you weren't making as much?
So we weren't making very much. We were. It took a long time to catch up from the winter, even though we had an amazing spring. The good news is that we didn't get the worst of last year and the worst of this year combined. So as long as we can get two or three things going right,
yeah,
that's a good thing.
But that's challenging. I mean, those are a lot of variables to be dealing with that are outside of your control. Yeah.
And the best thing you can do in the long game is to try to talking with people involved in the dairy industry is to try to pay down your debt. And that's kind of our goal, is to try to reduce our debt load. And if you can do that, then you kind of reduce your exposure to those things. So
that's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things I'm really curious about, I mean, so this is a lot of work. I mean, you're managing 200 acres. You're managing, what, 170 cows. Mm. How do you also find time to volunteer for so many things? So you were a county commissioner for how many years?
For 8 years.
Eight years. And you just got elected to the port.
Yeah,
commission as well.
Week, yeah.
I mean, that's
it's something else that it gets your mind off of what you're doing. So, I would never take time to go play golf.
Yeah.
But if I've been elected to an office, well, I'll make the time to go to a meeting because I think I was elected to an office to go do that. So in some ways, it's a good, healthy diversion from the everyday of farming.
Yeah.
To go do something else. So, and it's also fun to, you know. Yeah, go be involved in some.
Well, participating in your bigger community.
Yeah, being a part of your larger community and getting to know and meet people and deal with other issues.
So the balance is good.
I think it can be. So
yeah.
So I think I've gotten better about managing time and trying to pick your battles. So you can't do it all. So. Doesn't mean you can't try. But.
Absolutely. Well, I was also really impressed by the your milking parlor. You were saying that you built that in 2006?
Yeah, we built that in 2006, and that just allows us to milk cows a lot more efficiently, which basically the milk doesn't come from the milking parlor. It comes from the cows being out eating and sleeping and drinking. And so the less amount of time that they're in the milking facility, the better. The idea is we get them in and we get them out, and we, you know, and then the cows can go do their thing. So that helps make a more efficient operation and hopefully help improve everyone's quality of life, whether they're the people working for us or ourselves when we have to do the work. So.
And you sell your milk through Tillamook?
Yeah, we're a part of the Tillamook Cooperative, and we're very fortunate to be a part because they have a good reputation for a higher quality product. And because we're a farmer-owned cooperative, they're able to return some of their profits to us. They also invest in infrastructure and have to plan for the future, as we all do. But we get a higher return, so that allows us to hopefully do the same and gives us the options to hopefully make good decisions.
Do you have any idea what your milk goes to, or is it just all gets kind of mixed together?
I think most of our milk goes into medium or sharp cheddar and ice cream. So,
two of my favorite things.
Cheddar's better, yeah.
So. Well, cheddar and ice cream are pretty decent.
I think that's the our milk goes to the creamery in Tillamook, and I believe that's their main thing is the sharp cheddar and ice cream. So it's becoming a larger company, but that's where our milk goes. So
nice. And, Amanda, I know we talked earlier a little bit about, you have some interest in cheese making.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried making cheese at all, or is it something that you're just still experimenting with?
I took a class in Portland.
Yeah.
Washington State University put on, so it was a week-long class with a friend of mine.
Yeah.
So I did a little bit of experimenting, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, cheese making is good.
Yeah. Once Ellen goes to school.
what do you like about dairy farming? What do you like about doing this life?
Well, it works really well with raising a family. So that helps. I like the animals, being outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different your schedule, it just depends on what you're doing that day, and
yeah.
Sometimes you can get away a little bit and do things, or sometimes you're working really hard.
Well, I was impressed with how engaged the kids are here too. I mean, they both seem they're very familiar with the property,
yeah,
and the cows and how it all works, and you know, explaining how it and that seems like a really cool thing for kids at a pretty young age to be able to be part of that.
They've been out there since they were.
I mean, you guys are really
new.
You're a team.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. When we would do the morning milking, and they were like 2 months old, and they were out there. Got them up at 3 a.m. and brought them out, and they just slept in the stroller.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So I guess they just—I mean—you just get part of that routine, and that's just.
Yeah, that's just how it works. So.
Do they have any chores yet, or do they just kind of? Not really have the attention span
they
for it yet.
They help in the calf barn a little bit. They dump out the water buckets and fill up the water buckets. It's more about getting wet with the hose. That's Ellen's plan.
Yeah.
Filling your boot with water every day. So.
This one seems like a pretty great life.
Yeah, I think so. They really like, we have a garden, so they really enjoy the garden.
Yeah.
They each have their own raised bed, so that's been fun. They like to go out there and pick things and eat things. And
what do you find grows best out here, do you think?
I found some really good, like, basil crops with, you know, just it just being warmer out here. And
Because you're how many miles in from Astoria?
20.
About 20 miles along the Columbia. So it can be significantly warmer here.
20 degrees warmer. Yeah.
That makes all the difference
it
with basil,
tomatoes,
any of those things. Yeah.
Yeah, all of that goes well.
Wow.
I've had some really good corn crops and things like that, but lettuce.
Yeah.
You know, that grows well, of course. That's what I use all
Absolutely.
The time.
Absolutely.
So.
I know. Well, this is just an amazing setup that you have here, and it was fun to take the tour.
Yes.
On the four-wheelers, I have to say, it was kind of adventurous and very cool, but it was fun to see. And I mean, I really understand why you like living here. I understand why you do what you do. It's beautiful.
Yeah, we do like it. And when everything works well, it's pretty darn cool.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of In Season on Coast Community Radio. I want to thank the Roan family of Brownsmead Island Farm, Dirk, Amanda, Kirk, and Ellen, for their generous hospitality and for the most wild fun I think I've ever had on a farm tour. After visiting their farm, I don't think I'll ever look at a gallon of milk, a piece of cheese, or a pint of ice cream in quite the same way again. There is so much dedication, hard work, challenge, and sacrifice that goes into producing the milk that so many of us take for granted. I was impressed by how much thought Dirk and Amanda put into all aspects of their life and work. From the great care they take of their animals, the skills involved in managing pasture and making hay, to the love and support they give their kids, and the love the whole family clearly feels for the land they manage. Next time you're enjoying a bowl of Tillamook ice cream, give a thought to the hardworking dairy farmers and their cows, whose work has made that treat possible for you. I also want to thank our wonderful sound engineer, Katie, for making this crazy cow conversation sound good. If you want to listen to it again, it will be available to stream on coastradio.org.